think OWU means to me a community of people who work and live together. It's a community that provides a lot of opportunities, and students and faculty and staff can find their niche, what particular opportunities they want to pursue, what particular relationships they want to build upon, and it helps people, especially students, form a foundation or a springboard that they can rely on the rest of their lives.
Welcome to Bishop Banter, your guide to OWU. Here are your hosts, Ohio Wesleyan alumni, Courtney Dunn and Connor Green.
Welcome to the very first episode of Bishop Banter, your guide to OWU. I'm Connor.
And I'm Courtney.
And today we're going to be talking about the value of a liberal arts education.
I'm so excited to start our conversation about the liberal arts and how is OWU integrating the liberal arts into absolutely everything that we do. Connor, I would love to hear some insight from you about what is the liberal arts and why are we including this in our guide?
Yeah, of course. I mean, liberal arts is involved in everything Ohio Wesleyan does, whether it's combining a student's classroom experience to travel learning or to their club and organization or their internships or really anything they do. Liberal arts allows the students to connect everything and also explore, to take classes all over the place, to get into topics that they might not have been interested in before, but now have the opportunity to. And I think that's one big piece of liberal arts for us is just exploration.
I love that. And I think you're so right. The exploration to dive deep, but also have a lot of breadth in the skills and knowledge that our students are gaining. So that being said,
To help us elaborate a little bit more on this topic, we're going to have one of OWU's very own professors here, Dr. Linda Hall, to banter with us. Linda, if you could introduce yourself a little bit, tell us about what you do here at OWU and what your role is.
So I've been a faculty member since 1989, teaching courses in cognitive psychology and behavioral statistics and research methods. And then 4 years ago, I became the Associate Dean for Academic Performance. We've changed that title a couple times, so I'm really glad you got it right because I'm not confident that I would. Now I'm half-time faculty and half-time administration. And for my administrative role, I do duties as assigned, I think is probably number one. But three of my other duties are that I help organize the academic portion of the summer orientation program. I also help direct our first year course, the UC-160 course. And I also am a liaison to the Sagan Academic Resource Center, which houses all of our academic support efforts. So tutoring and academic advising and the Writing Resource Center and the Quantitative Skills Center and the Disability Services Center. And I'm probably leaving out about five more, but all of our academic resource center or services. So that's what I do.
Wow, that's a lot of hats.
It is. I feel like I'm juggling quite a bit these days.
We're really happy that you're here. One of the things that we really want to touch on, not just in this episode, but in all of the ones that we're talking about, is liberal arts. The value of a liberal arts education. And I think before we dive into what that value is, I think it's important to define what a liberal arts education is. So could you talk a little bit about what liberal arts is, what it means, and how it affects institutions?
Good question. And not one that has a real good straightforward answer, I don't think. We spend a lot of time in that UC-160 course trying to explore the various definitions and what that really means for students. Because if you're going to come here, if you're going to get a liberal arts education, the only way you can build on the strengths is if you know what the strengths are. Any educational approach has strengths and weaknesses. So when I'm trying to explain it, two things that I try to say, first of all, is that the liberal has nothing to do with one's political affiliation. Liberal in this context means general. We're trying to teach general skills. And so I think it's most clear if you contrast it with a very different kind of education. If a student wants to be a welder, they should go to technical training where they will learn the very specific skills that someone needs to do welding. And if someone wants to be a welder, that is the appropriate kind of education to get, and it will teach them to do that. we are not training those specific job skills. What we are training instead are skills that should transcend lots of disciplines and lots of jobs. So the disadvantage of being trained to be a welder is if things change. If someone gets tired of being a welder or is hurt on the job or just decides that they want to pursue a new opportunity, they're going to have to go back to school because that education won't be relevant in other contexts. Our education should prepare people for a lifelong learn, to become a lifelong learner, to be able to adapt, I guess, to the challenges of the job market. So we know that most people will have a wide variety of jobs throughout their lifetime, and this should prepare them to be able to adapt, to learn, to grow, to acquire the specific skills they need in lots of contexts. If they stay in one field, as that field changes, or if they decide to change fields. So the kinds of general skills we're talking about are things like critical thinking, is a big one. Learning how to learn, creative problem solving, especially how to solve problems that aren't just replications of what people have seen before, and problems that might involve understanding from various different kinds of disciplinary perspectives. So that's a lot of what we're trying to do.
I love that. Kind of hearing you talk as two graduates of a liberal arts education, I think that Connor and I really are experiencing what those transferable skills are and how critical it is in knowing how to learn in whatever job you jump into post-graduation, whether that's in the field that you studied or whether that's not in the field that you went to school for.
Yeah.
But at the beginning, you mentioned a class called UC160. Mm-hmm. So if you could elaborate a little bit more on how is that class preparing students to learn in a liberal arts education?
They put together a four-year plan. We call it My OU Journey. And although we ask them to list out what courses they think they'll take every semester, that's really not the point. We don't expect students in their first semester to be able to say what courses they'll take spring semester of their senior year. What we do want them to do is learn how to plan. And we want them to start thinking about the fact that if they are going to go and study abroad for a semester in their junior year, then that impacts what they do their first year because they'll want to be able to complete some of their general education requirements so that they'll be prepared to do that. So we want them to start getting a feel for some of those trade-offs. We also want them to start thinking more intentionally about what opportunities they choose to pursue, both in the curriculum and in the co-curriculum. So we know that nationwide, college students are a stressed group of folks. Anxiety levels and depression levels are much higher than what we'd like to see. And so we think that with more careful choices, students can help to minimize some of that stress, to manage some of that stress better. And part of that means thinking about things like, if you want to be captain of a varsity sports team, that's probably not the semester to take organic chemistry. And if you have a plan, then you can manage those things, come up with a scenario that's going to be more manageable, a better foundation for success.
That's a lot of things to help students. That's really awesome.
Well, and it happens within a small group. So students can talk to one another. Class does not exceed 16 students. Mm-hmm. They get to know their professors very well. They have some opportunities outside the classroom to do some bonding. One of the things that the students really like, we have a detailed survey students complete at the end of each semester, but they do a service learning project together. And that's an opportunity to become acquainted both with the instructor and with the other students. So I hope that we let students know that as they're becoming acquainted with this, as they're learning about this, they're not alone. Mm-hmm. They're with a larger group of people having similar issues. And often, I think the best advice the students get are from the other students in the class.
Yeah. You mentioned when talking about like liberal arts and what it is that you're teaching students how to learn. I think it sounds like UC160 does a lot of teaching students how to learn at Ohio Wesleyan kind of a thing.
I like that definition. I'll borrow that.
All right.
I think that is a really good way to summarize it, yes.
Mm-hmm. I like that a lot. UC160 might be a piece of this, but specifically liberal arts, I mean, we're not the only university around who is a liberal arts university, but, you know, what is Ohio Wesleyan doing differently or doing in a different way to enhance that part of the liberal arts education?
That's another good question. I think I could answer lots of things. The primary one I would point to would be the OWU connection. And we have a challenge in trying to summarize what is the OWU connection in a sentence. Daryl Albin, who's one of our directors, said one time that he thinks it's a smorgasbord of opportunities. And I think that's a nice way to put it. And part of what's nice about that is that it means that no two students do it the same. You have lots of different ways to engage with the OWU connection. The opportunities, though, have a theme, and one of the primary themes is to try to take theory and put it into practice, to take learning from the classroom and see it in a real-life setting. For some students, that means an internship. For some students, it means going with a travel learning class where they've learned about a particular topic in class, and then they travel to see how this is implemented. So I think all of the faculty who plan these are really creative. I've never taken on that particular challenge. But one of them that I thought was really fun was Katie Thomas in the chemistry department a couple years ago had a section of organic chemistry. And part of what they learned is how organic chemistry is used to restore ancient paintings. And I think they went over spring break, they went to Italy. And they saw how this is put into play. So that was a really cool opportunity. Yeah. So all of these opportunities are taking what happens in the classroom, which can be very abstract, and looking at it in real life implementations. And so that's a nice way of helping ground those general skills that we're talking about in a specific instance.
I like that a lot.
And I think that provides a lot of opportunities for students to do so many different things. And I really like what you said, that no student's path is the same, mm-hmm. that mm-hmm. we're really taking on the liberal arts in a way that when the student arrives in the UC 160 to plan their 4 years, mm-hmm. they're also building what opportunities in the OWU connection are going to be for them, because it's not the same for yes. every student, whether that's traveling abroad or doing an internship right here on campus. I mean, yes. those are two yes. wonderful opportunities, but two very different ways of approaching student mm-hmm. learning and student engagement.
And one thing I'd like to clarify is I don't think all students, in fact, probably most students, have not decided exactly what their OWU connection will be at the end of the first semester. It's not an easy decision, but we want them to start to gain that information, that foundation, so that they can make those choices well.
I think that lines up, too, with a lot. I mean, a lot of our students don't exactly know what they even want to study yes, at that point.
Yes, yes.
And those things are okay, but it's learning to make those steps and learn what it is you want to do yes. kind of a thing.
One of the things I think is almost ironic is that part of what we want students to do when we ask them to put together this plan where we have them list out what courses they might take each semester is we want them to learn to explore, which opens more opportunities and makes it harder to say specifically what courses. But if they've gone through the practice at least once of saying what the courses are, then they can adapt it as new opportunities and interests develop, which they typically do.
And I like what you were saying about the organic chemistry class and actually putting those into play and going to Italy. And maybe a chemistry student never thought that they would have a vested yes. interest in the arts
yes.
as well. So if you could elaborate a little bit more on the value of getting a STEM degree from a liberal arts school and okay. what are those benefits and what does that look like maybe differently for a student who's going to a specific STEM school?
One of the opportunities for me, since I've become an administrator, is I've gone to a whole different set of conferences, and I hear a whole different set of speakers, and it's been really, really interesting. And several of the speakers there have written books. Jeffrey Salingo has written a book called There Is Life After College. I'm blanking on some of the others. But what these authors have often done is gone and talked to employers. And there's some consistency in what those employers are saying. They're saying that they don't want people who are trained just to do one specific thing. They want people who can work in a team, who can communicate to people across disciplines, who have appreciation for different disciplines. That's liberal arts. And we know that a lot of jobs in a lot of fields are being eliminated because they're becoming automated. And one speaker I heard this past fall pointed out that STEM jobs are being automated at a higher rate than non-STEM jobs. And that doesn't mean that STEM fields are not good things to pursue. What it does mean that if you want to be have a little bit of a cushion or a safeguard against being in a career that's going to be automated and disappear, it's if you have these other skills. Some people refer to them as soft skills. I really don't like that term. But some other skills to supplement the STEM skills. So, for example, I think Salengo said at one conference that he anticipated, I don't remember the exact number, but a very high percentage of accounting jobs will be automated and be gone in the next couple decades. There was some controversy among people who were attending about whether his number was right, but no one disagreed that a lot of accounting jobs are going away. Accounting is a great field and still is something that people might want to pursue. However, what people should keep in mind is that those who are most likely to have the jobs are those who can do accounting plus. Accounting plus, they can relate to people who are directing arts organizations because they have some appreciation for the arts, right? Accounting plus, they can write well, so they can communicate clearly to their clients. Accounting plus, critical thinking, so they can begin to think about different ways that people can organize to do their own accounting better, et cetera. So I think I kind of branched away from STEM, but I think no matter what students want to major in, STEM or non-STEM, being able to think and understand things across disciplines is a real asset when you leave Ohio Wesleyan and want to pursue other opportunities.
We're really preparing for students for that. All duties as assigned kind of a thing?
Yes.
Or other duties as assigned.
Other duties as assigned, yeah.
You know, I had a conversation with my kids last weekend, and one of the things I had to remind them, which makes me not feel young, is that when I was in college, there was no such thing as the internet. We had no clue what the internet might be, and yet many of my contemporaries have jobs, and I did go to a liberal arts college, have jobs. Nobody has a job that doesn't have something to do with the internet, right? But many of them are web content developers or web designers or social media coordinators. So they're working in with technologies, with just approaches that didn't exist then. For our current students, who knows what the future is going to bring? The only thing we know is that change is more rapid than ever before. And so being prepared to adapt is one of the best skills, I think, that you can acquire.
And now, a short break for this week's Rock Solid Advice from Ohio Wesleyan's 16th president, Rock Jones.
A liberal arts education is the best preparation for a rich and full life, for a life that has meaning and purpose, for a life that leads to productive work, for a life that finds beauty in the arts and in the natural world. The liberal arts education teaches you to think, it teaches you to communicate, it teaches you to value differences among people and to see the beauty of those differences. The liberal arts education prepares you for a rich and a full life.
And now, back to Bishop Banter.
So you talk a lot about students being able to adapt based on changing technologies and the changing career fields. And so how are we training students to adapt, whether they're in the field that they studied or in a different field altogether?
Again, lots of ways. It starts with something really fundamental that we require students to take courses across the various disciplines. So every student has to take more than one course in the natural sciences, more than one course in the social sciences, more than one course in literature and humanities, and at least one course in the arts. The exact number varies with which major people choose, but for the vast majority of students, that will be 3, 3, and 3 for natural sciences, social sciences, humanities, and literature, and then one course in the arts. So that's a beginning. We also have a program called Writing Across the Curriculum. So most students either take or test out of our first-year writing seminar, college writing seminar, and that's to begin to be introduced to basic skills that one needs to communicate in college. But then they'll complete 3 more courses in any discipline. So there are some students, it's not typical, but there are some students who earn their writing credit in a math course. And what they do is they do more intensive writing in those classes with one-on-one feedback. So we're really trying to teach those writing skills and give lots of practice in those writing skills, because that's something that only comes with that kind of practice. So that's a big piece of it. We are trying to introduce more opportunities for interdisciplinary kinds of experiences, particularly in the honors program. We're introducing some interdisciplinary seminars. There's other opportunities for that. For example, some of the students who are global scholars take a seminar their first year that's interdisciplinary. Students who participate in the Summer Bridge program will do an interdisciplinary course that looks at a particular real-life issue. So, for example, the last couple years, they've focused on the water crisis in Flint, Michigan. And they've traveled to Flint, and they've met with activists, and they've met with government leaders, and they've met with all kinds of people who are dealing with that issue, and they've learned about it. And they've learned about it from scientific perspectives and historical perspectives and all kinds of different perspectives, try to learn how to communicate about it, et cetera. So I think the notion that these critical thinking skills, these writing skills, these quantitative reasoning skills, and more are valuable pervades the curriculum. It's something that most people try to bring into their courses either directly or indirectly. So students will encounter them in multiple ways in multiple classes.
I was just going to say that you talked about the first part of students taking courses in other disciplines and being able to experience that. Personally, for me, that's one of my favorite parts of coming from Ohio Wesleyan, was that I came in as someone who thought they knew exactly what they wanted to do, but took classes in all of these different areas and was able to explore and happened upon a certain study, sociology, for me, that I really enjoyed but wouldn't have taken if I wasn't in that type of curriculum. So I think that's one thing that a lot of students don't think about, is that maybe they know exactly what they want to do, and maybe they'll add some things along the way, too.
Yes, or switch completely. Mm-hmm. That happens also. One of the things I say is to incoming students is that I think they have the opportunity to make an informed decision about a major, that there seems to be a lot of pressure before students come to select their major. And I think that can often be premature. You're making a choice blind. You haven't tried the classes yet. And so here students can wait till the end of sophomore year before they have to declare their major, and they can finish it and graduate in 4 years. And I think there's real advantages to that.
And students are finishing their major in 4 years and another major, or a major in two minors. Mm-hmm. I think that culture at Ohio Wesleyan, I love talking to students when they talk about, I'm studying music and chemistry, or yes, I'm studying neuroscience and theater. And I get so excited because I'm like, how on earth are you doing that in 4 years? But it's possible. Are you able to elaborate a little bit more on why students are able to double major, maybe the benefits of double majoring and what that looks like at Ohio Wesleyan?
I think there's two aspects to that question. One is that, unlike some other institutions, we have courses that will count in more than one major. Now, music and chemistry, not so much. Neuroscience and psychology, though, there's quite a few that would count for both majors. So that means you don't have to take about 10 courses in one plus another 10 in the other. You can have some that count both ways. We also count major courses toward the general education requirements. So that helps. It means in the 34 courses typically that students complete, when things are counting for more than one thing, that helps them complete more than one major, or combination of majors and minors. But I think a message that we need to deliver a little more clearly is that while there are opportunities to double major or to have a combination of majors and minors, there are also some costs. And really the purpose of a major is to help someone to learn how to get in-depth knowledge in a particular field. And some of the students who are doing lots and lots of majors are sacrificing some of that depth. And that depth is important because I think when students get out into the real world, it's very likely that whatever field they're in is going to change, so they need to continue to acquire more in-depth knowledge, or if they want to switch fields, they want to have those lifelong learning skills. And so too many majors might mean they don't get to do those really capstone kinds of experiences in one of the majors that can help bring things together, that can really be very meaningful. We also see some students getting very stressed about trying to complete more than one major. You need one major to graduate. And I think many times doing one major thoroughly and well has a lot more benefit than doing two or three. And I think some of the pressure to try to do more comes from a misconception that we're doing job training, and that's not liberal arts. So I suspect, and I've talked to some individual students where I think this is true, that they want more than one major because they think that will qualify them for more jobs. And that's just not really the case. The student's major is likely to have quite a bit of influence on their first job, but less influence on the second. And the longer they're out from Ohio Wesleyan, the more they're likely to switch in directions that they haven't anticipated. And so I think the more important thing that students take is the liberal arts degree. And the major is often secondary. It's an important decision, and it's one that's very meaningful for students. And if a student wants to do more than one major or wants to do a major in minors and has a reason for it, then that's a good reason to do it. But to do it because I think everybody else does and I might be behind if I don't is not a good reason to do it. And those are the students I think that often weaken rather than strengthen their competitiveness for postgraduate opportunities. We've come to feel that, and this is one of the things we try to address a bit in UC-160, is that the culture that our entering students are coming out of really emphasizes collecting credentials. So I'm in this activity and this activity and this activity, and I'm president of this, and I've done this, and I've had this major. And what we find is when our students are graduating, a list of credentials doesn't count for much. What counts much more is having a narrative, to be able to explain what you learned from particular experiences, what skills you gained, and why those skills will make you a good candidate for whatever it is you want to do next. That's a more in-depth conversation, a more in-depth understanding of what you've experienced, and what it really requires is taking time to reflect on what did this mean to me. And when you're scurrying from one activity to the next, or from one major class to the next, and running all over the place, it's hard to make time for that kind of reflection. So that's not exactly an answer to your question, but I think it's important for students to know they need a major. And if they have a good reason for another major, you have the opportunity to do that here, and you may do it in unexpected ways. But you can get a really good education not doing more than one major, and that's also something that I think students should take very seriously as a strong and valuable possibility.
I think that's a very powerful answer. And I think it's not something that a lot of students are hearing a lot and something that needs to be talked about.
Yes.
And I think as you talk about in-depth knowledge, I feel like that is the value of the OWU connection to the liberal arts. Mm-hmm. That the OWU connection is helping students gain that depth through traveling abroad, through internships, through research, through theory to practice. Students are able to go to all of these different places and gain that in-depth knowledge in the field of their choice.
And see that in context, you are not going to see the same way in the classroom, even with a video, even with a guest speaker. Those things are really valuable, but it doesn't replace experiencing it directly.
So we've talked a lot about how liberal arts affects specifically major and students' class experience and their educational experience, but how does the liberal arts and the educational aspects come into play to everything we do at OWU? Oh. So we talked a lot about the OWU connection, so that's a lot there, but also athletics or clubs, organizations that students are involved in, or leadership opportunities, things along those lines.
Thank you for asking that question, because I think that's a piece I haven't hit on that's really important, is that our staff in the Division of Student Engagement and Success also share educational values. So they're very good at helping students make choices, have experiences that develop leadership skills, for example, that involve reflection on what they're doing and why. Within a context where they can also have a lot of fun, which is a good thing too. So I think there's a good partnership there in terms of we're striving for the same goals. We're on the same page. And that allows, again, that a community approach to trying to help students find what's best for them. I hear my colleagues from Student Engagement and Success saying that they're telling students that what they need to do is dive deep. And that's their way of saying what I'm trying to say, is that rather than getting lots and lots and lots of different experiences, there's often more value in doing fewer things really well, really thoroughly, experiencing them for their full potential. And I think you have more opportunity to gain those really high-level skills when you've chosen to dive deep.
Mm-hmm. And when students dive deep, I mean, I think we see it all the time, is that they might not think about it this way, but mm-hmm. when they're in these organizations or they're in these opportunities, they're still getting that liberal arts experience.
Absolutely.
They might not be thinking of it that way, yes. but it's happening.
And I'd say it's also a theory to practice mm-hmm. approach that, again, they can take ideas, concepts that they may have encountered in the classroom, and there's another laboratory setting, so to speak, where they can try some things out.
I think the fact that our faculty and our staff are here to help students not just learn, but to grow in that learning. And mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I think talking about those things and how we do that and how we help students grow in maybe yes. they have multiple missteps, but they're yes. not going to make yes. the same mistakes over and over because our faculty are investing in what the students are learning and doing yes. on a regular basis.
Yes.
I think one big theme from everything we have talked about, every topic, every little part, is that there are people around the students to help and to guide mm-hmm. and to help them learn and move on. We want to help students get through the 4 years here and have, I say this all the time to my students, is not just a successful career, but a successful life mm-hmm. as well.
Yes.
And I
yes.
think that's one big thing we do to help prepare students.
Yeah. Yeah. Rock likes to ask prospective students three questions, and he always asks us the convocation at the beginning of the school year, so I might be stealing his thunder. But he asks them, what do you care about, where do you want to go, and who do you want to be? And I do think that captures the essence of how we're trying to approach things. That, you know, I know when I asked my kids when they were in kindergarten, who do you want to be, the answer was an astronaut or a professional basketball player or, you know, and their comprehension, because they were five, was very limited. And now we're looking for people to get an understanding of who they want to be that goes way beyond that kind of a simple label. What kind of person do you want to be? And your career path is going to play a big role in it, but it's going to be so much more than that. And there's opportunities to learn and grow and reflect and gain skills and gain knowledge that can help students come to that answer, I think.
I love that. And I think we talk about, in our society, what defines success. And a lot of times, sometimes that answer is career, and sometimes that answer is family, and success means something different to different people.
Yes.
And so a lot of times we're asked by families who are looking to come to Ohio Wesleyan, they ask us, what does a successful Ohio Wesleyan student look like? And it's such a hard question to answer.
Yes.
Because
yes.
a successful student is every student on campus,
yes.
but they all do it so differently.
Yes.
Do you have an answer to what does
No, because I agree with you. It's unique. It's individualized. One student that I remember from when I was first teaching, that I think was one of my biggest successes, she had a success. I won't claim credit for her. But what she did is she failed my course, and came back and retook it, and earned a B second time through. And the fact that she persisted, it was research method, so it was a core course for our major. You can't complete a major in psychology without that course. She was devastated by the initial experience, as you can well expect. But I think she came out so much stronger because she did persist. She did come back. She proved to herself that she can do it. I think on a transcript, the F certainly is not a strength. But the fact that she came back and showed that she had the skills to be able to master that material and to do well mattered. And so that's not the kind of things people would typically point to for success. And not every student has that experience, I have to say. But I think it can play out in a lot of different ways.
I love that.
Well, thank you so much for talking with us today, Linda.
Thank you for this opportunity.
Yeah.
This was fun.
This was just so much information that is so critical to a liberal arts education, specifically here at OWU, but at all liberal arts universities, too. So we really appreciate you coming to talk with us. And any first-year students, look forward to taking UC 160 and learning how to learn at OWU. Yeah. We'll coin that one.
Nice, that's a nice thing.
All right. Well, we'll see you around campus, Linda.
Okay. Thank you.
Thanks, everyone, for listening. Tune in next time for some more Bishop Banter.
And make sure to check us out at OWU Admission on Instagram and Twitter, and find us wherever you listen to your podcasts. See you next time.